Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration. Collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Andrea Hummel, and it was a fascinating conversation about psychodrama, something that I probably don't think I knew very much about. I think if somebody had brought it up or had mentioned it to me in conversation, you know, sort of idle conversation over dinner, I would have said, oh yeah, no, I think I know what that is, and then would hope they would unpack it for me as our conversation continued. Well, Andrea is with us today from Improv for Peace. That's improvforpeace.com. You can check them out. Andrea is using a technique, a theatrical technique, that a very creative and artful technique to go a little deeper, to understand trauma, to understand mental health issues, to work through things, and to I think really in a way to find common ground. We talk about cultural diversity and political correctness. We get into what do you do with the ugly? We talk about creating safe spaces and having difficult conversations. We talk about something called the empty chair technique. We talk about policy over practice and about why cleaning out in the junk in our psyches is so important, and why it's really essential to get to those belief systems that are sort of lurking there behind everything we say and do. We talk about empathy and understanding and mirroring and listening, and why we should take notes. So yeah, listening's important, but taking notes takes it to the next level. We talk we touch briefly on why being a hermit might be a bad idea. So don't touch that dial. Coming right up, Andrea Hummel, talking about psychodrama and her organization, Improv for Peace. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing, my speaking. You can purchase a copy of Real Change is Incremental there. And also, if you'd like to get behind face-to-face, facetofacelive.ca, that's the podcast. That's what we're doing here, having these casual conversations with, you know, hopefully, you know, creating some impact and dropping those pebbles in the pond. You can support us through Patreon on a monthly basis. We'd certainly appreciate that. And if you can't do that, and I totally get it and understand if you can't, leaving us a review on iTunes or Spotify would be wonderful. Sign up for the newsletter, share it with your friends, and let's grow this podcast. And we've got a pretty good reach, great reach, actually. So if you'd like to advertise with us, you can do that on the website. We've got banner ads and so on. You can also advertise in our newsletter. And of course, shout outs throughout podcasts as well. So reach out and you can connect with me through the website to find out more about that. And don't forget to rabble.ca, where I'm also hosting interested and thrilled to be a part of. And that's the news for the rest of us. We've got podcasters and writers and other thinkers and journalists who are going a little deeper and peeling back those layers to find out what's going on just below the surface. Coming right up, though, next is Andrea Hummel, Improv for Peace and Psychodrama. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today. Andrea Hummel is here to talk about a peace and policy and improvisation. And I'm really looking forward to this this podcast, this interview. Andrea, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
So I don't know, where do we begin? I mean, there's you know, we've been having sort of what my listeners aren't privy to is that conversation before we hit the record button. So I already have some places we could go, but why don't you tell us a little bit about, I guess, who you are and this thing called Improv for Peace? And I think that would be a great sort of place to just provide a little bit of context and history, and then we can kind of dive in from there.
Right. So a lot of times people say, well, why did you want to get into this type of work? And I guess that's what you call my origin story.
Right.
So I grew up bicultural, not Latino, but actually German American, in the 60s, during a time when people still weren't talking much about what the heck is a German. And but at the same time, I was being called a Nazi in school. Mm. And just a lot of strange things going on. And so in an effort to try to understand that and understand who I was and how it all fit into the bigger picture, I became an anthropologist, a cultural anthropologist. And so I started out talking about cultural diversity, teaching cultural diversity, doing workshops, and then realized very quickly that it just wasn't getting deep enough, because right about that time is when political correctness became popular. And so the objections I had to PC was that, in my opinion, it was just a way of glossing over the differences that we have. And so my approach is kind of the opposite, to dive right in and to figure out what those differences are, bring them to the surface, really talk about them. And so I became interested in what do we do with that piece that's conflictual, the piece that's ugly, the differences, all those things that people are afraid of. And rather than just try to talk about them and or not talk about them, as the case may be, I wanted to actually do something with those differences. And so I started getting into improvisations and actually something called psychodrama. And a lot of times people are afraid of the term psychodrama because it has these negative overtones.
Well, it seems it's almost, and, you know, you sort of conjured up horror movie like notions as soon as you said it. And I'm kind of familiar with it, but that's sort of where I went, you know what I mean? Right out of the gate.
Yep. Which is why I don't call what I do psychodrama. I call it improvisations. But basically what that is recreating those difficult conversations that we would like to have with people of a different background, and then being able to just work through those conversations and come up with a different ending than we would if we were out in the so-called real world trying to have those conversations. Because when you can have those conversations in a safe space, in an imagined space a lot of times with facilitators, those conversations turn out very differently. And so it actually changes. The science has proven that acting out scenarios and acting out conversations actually will rewire your brain in a more positive way. And so the more we do that, the more we try to have those conversations with different, more healing endings, the more we're able to come up with positive solutions to what we before thought were untenable situations.
So Andrea, does improv then give me the ability, as you know, I'm partaking in, say, some form of group improv for peace? I'm not sure what you would call it. I'd love to hear about that too. So it gives me almost a license, in a sense, to not be cruel or to be unkind to someone or to an organization, but to maybe speak more truth or to be more authentic, which hopefully then will lead to me you know, being more authentic and more truthful on a day-to-day basis. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. And I like what you're saying about not being cruel necessarily, but just being honest.
Right.
So I do have to explain that piece a little more, again, for people who aren't quite clear on what psychodrama or sociodrama is. Psychodrama is more on the individual level. Sociodrama, because it's society, looks at the larger societal picture. Mm-hmm. It's really pretty much the same thing. So what you do is you create in a group situation, you create a conversation, you create a scenario that the group agrees on. For example, I want to work out the fact that I have something against gays. And so then that becomes something that the group agrees on. Yeah, that's a topic that we can work on. But instead of then it becoming a scenario, a miniature theater piece, a drama piece about how I feel about this particular group, it becomes more a story about how I feel about people who are different from me. So we take away the individual details of that one person's story, and the story then becomes, or that dynamic becomes more universal theme.
So it's less, it's less threatening, isn't it? Probably to the yeah. person who's actually presenting it, but also to the other person or organization that's hearing that dialogue or that message.
Exactly, because it's less threatening. Yeah. And interestingly, then everyone finds or tends to find an overlay to bits and pieces of that story that they can connect with. Mm. And because of those smaller overlays, they kind of jump in and play pieces of that. It's similar. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of the empty chair technique, where you set up a chair and you visualize that someone with whom you would like to have a conversation with, for example, your father who's passed away 20 years before, so you can obviously no longer talk to him, you're able to have a conversation with that person in an imagined space. So psychodrama or improv for peace uses those similar pieces. And again, the empty chair is just one piece
right.
of the tools that we use.
So let's just get uber practical here for a second. Who tell us where we can find out more about it. And by no means are we near the end of the conversation, but you've got a website. Am I, as a company, coming to you and hiring you to come in and to facilitate one of these with a group of 5, 10, or 15 people in my team? Or could this be a whole organization? Or is it really more about that one-on-one kind of therapeutic value?
Well, a lot of people do psychodrama one-on-one, and it's a big piece of therapy at the moment. But really, it was originally created in the 1900s for groups, again, for organizations. So, yeah, it would be a company calling me or an organization. I work a lot also with organizations who have communication problems within their teams. Hmm. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be a large traumatic issue. It's just, how do we communicate better as a team? And what I also do, and this is actually what I'm most excited about, is doing this kind of work on the community level. So I was working a few years back with, well, actually it's only been a year and a half, in Charlottesville, Virginia. As most people know, that they had the white supremacist march back in August 2017, mm-hmm. and it led to riots, and the whole city was very uncomfortable after that, felt traumatized. And so I and a group of people came in and did a six-month project on helping the community recover from that. So, for example, what happened in El Paso, I would say that in a few months' time, they may be ready for that kind of community healing also. It's not something that you go in right away, but you have to give people a little bit of time for their emotions to settle to be able to process them again.
So is this about, would you say, learning? I mean, you're not going to be in a day-to-day situation and, you know, say having an argument with Well, maybe you are, and I'm smiling when I say this, but you're having an argument with someone, you're having a conversation, or I'm not going to step into a moment of improv, but the idea is that the work that I've done with improv, by the way, it's improvforpeace.com, is it not?
It is,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, good.
Improvforpeace.com.
So is it that I've learned tools? I've gained another level of humility. I've gained another level of self-confidence that says, no, I can actually speak truth into this situation. I can have this difficult conversation now because I did the work with improv. I get it. This is about opening my mind and hopefully theirs. Am I onto something here?
Yes. So in a sense, It's like cleaning out the gunk
right.
out of our psyches.
Right.
Because, and again, I do have to reference what's going on here in the U.S., especially because we've had a few traumatic incidents just the last week. And so that's fresh on everybody's mind, especially for me being here in Washington, D.C. And I just lost my train of thought.
I think we were really talking about theory over practice in a way. So the idea of, well, you know, what are the lessons that I would take from, you know, working with my team that I could actually apply, you know, in everyday life and in a conversation and you know, because I'm not going to just break into improv, I don't think, right? or the acting techniques or whatever it is that you guys teach, but it's about the tools, it seems to me, or providing a level of self-confidence or you know, giving me the tools I need to be less threatening or something like that.
So after going through a workshop with Improv for Peace, like I started to say, it cleans out the extra stress,
the junk, I think you said.
Yeah. Because we get so full on a daily basis from all the negativity around us that we take it in and we decide that that just cements who we are and cements our belief systems. But if we really get behind what those belief systems are about, then we can let go of those belief systems. For example, it's just taking again the scenario brought up before of a group saying, let's work on how we feel about people of a different sexual orientation. Well, I may find out after going through a workshop that it really has nothing to do with someone with a different sexual orientation. It has to do with me feeling ostracized when I was younger. And so once I can heal that part of me that feels ostracized and is looking unconsciously at the world around me for other opportunities where I could feel that same way or trying to guard against feeling that same way, then I'm no longer triggered by those types of situations.
So this is about empathy.
Yes, it's empathy and understanding yourself better so that you can communicate better with others. Because I always believe if you know yourself, you're going to be more open to understanding others. And the other thing that you get from going to a workshop is tools, not just this one tool around the improv part. And again, I use improv just to show that the scenarios that we put on don't have a scripted ending or a scripted way to proceed, but they are improvised and they happen the way they need to organically. So the other thing is also learning skills such as specific techniques for empathy. One of them is called doubling, and that's very similar to what most people think of as mirroring someone's body language, mirroring their emotions, just so you can develop that level of empathy and connection. Because once we're able to connect with someone else, we're more able to really feel what they're feeling and we can get out of our own way. So again, this is all about connecting and about being willing to see the other person's point of view so that we don't have a need to take a gun and go shoot someone.
I love that notion of getting out of your own way. I think that's not only is it one of my favorite new U2 songs, which is always relevant and meaningful, but I think it's really practical. I think, you know, what I heard earlier in the conversation, and I think what I'm hearing about all the work that you do is this idea of similarity through difference. And I mean, isn't that empathy? Isn't that what, you know, having difficult conversations is about, and about listening to others? And yet it seems like culturally in this 21st century, we're going kind of the other way. We're focusing on the difference and not the similarity. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And I sometimes wonder if it's the effect of the pendulum swinging back the other way, not only in our country, but across the world, because we've seen the heads of state of various countries over the last few years recently becoming more conservative. And especially in the U.S., we have someone who has a very, in my opinion, rather xenophobic outlook. Mm-hmm. And so it gives permission to a lot of other people in society who in the past have felt it was not appropriate to voice those opinions to go ahead and voice them now.
Right.
And if they don't feel heard, they will just speak even louder and louder, including, again, through violence, because they just want to be heard. And so when Trump was elected a few years back, my first reaction was, oh, no, what are we going to do now? But then I chose to look at it as a different way, as an opportunity, actually, for our country to have those kinds of conversations that we haven't in the past because we've been afraid to, or it's not appropriate, or it's not politically correct. So I'm really hoping that this will bring more conversations to the surface on a conversational level, again, through words rather than through weapons.
Yeah, and clearly conversation that ultimately leads, you know, to change.
Right, because I do think we have so many different points of view in each country, and you see that also with ethnic groups who in the past have been pushed together to try to form one country. I'm thinking specifically of Yugoslavia. And now we see the opposite, which is a lot of countries and a lot of ethnic groups dividing and coming apart again into their smaller constituent parts. And I think it's people looking for their singular voice rather than wanting to be lumped together. They want to be able to have their own voice. And we need to find a way to, again, do that in a peaceful manner.
Right. Yeah, because clearly, I mean, and again, in a way, to get out of your own way, you kind of have to know what your way is. I mean, that sounds maybe sort of trite and clever, but it's sort of true, right? I mean, you need to have that, physician heal thyself, right? It's about self-awareness. And I think that's why the work you're doing is so important. About, I mean, one of the things I've learned in doing international development and traveling is just this idea of empathy and listening, and how critical and how important it really is. Listening and maybe taking notes, if that makes sense.
Right, because taking notes actually gets you fully engaged with what you're hearing. And I'm a little concerned about the proliferation of technology, social media, and forgive me for saying this, because obviously we're going to post this on social media.
That's right. Yeah, we might even put some money against it. So yeah. We don't want you, though, just to like the interview. We want you to listen to it and then maybe forward it to a friend. There you go. That's the kind of social mediation we'd like to see.
Right. But because we're Instagramming and Twittering and texting and all this, there isn't quite that emotional involvement in that little note that you get popping up on your screen. And so I think we're beginning to, my generation as well as, you know, my daughter's generation and all those, the ones after that, are beginning to separate from the ability to have that empathy, because all we see is information popping up on our little screen. And yet, if we were to either follow up on what you were saying, if we were to see that text or that Facebook quote pop up and then take notes on it, we get more engaged. And so what I'm circling around back to is I do think we're losing, as a world, we're losing the ability to really connect with others and connect with what people are saying to us because we don't have those face-to-face conversations as much.
You, you're in the land of policymaking, and yet you seem to be incredibly, you know, proactive, not reactive. You're in the middle of it. You're working with people. You're face-to-face, very practical. Can you talk a little bit about that and that maybe that conscious choice that you've made to not focus on that higher level conversation? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I chose to pursue my master's degree in Washington, D.C., and then move back here specifically because I wanted to be close to the hub of where things were happening and where decisions were being made. But paradoxically, I didn't want to get involved in the policy work myself. My hat's off to people who are able to do that, but somehow that's just not something I can do. I connect better with people one-on-one.
Is it too slow? Is that part of it? Is it too incremental?
You know what? That's a good reason. I hadn't thought of it.
It's got to be so frustrating. I mean, I've certainly worked with people at a government level, and the one meeting, well, great, that leads to another meeting, and then more invites, and now we've got 3 months, and then there's a delay, and and everybody's breaking, so now we're going to meet back in the fall. And honestly, it's such a cliche, but there's a lot of truth in it too.
Yeah. Well, and I also think, you know, policy has to be implemented for a large group of people.
Right.
But on the other hand, once you get a large group of people, their needs may not all be the same. And so, you know, thinking of the Department of Education, for example, so there can be some policies handed down that may work very well in Florida, but in California or Texas, those same policies just don't make sense. And so I think that's been kind of my frustration also. And, you know, I'm realizing as I say this, I probably should tread carefully. But let me just say again that I really appreciate people who can do that.
Right, of course. It has to be done. You need people who enjoy it and who want to be there. Absolutely. I'm with you.
Yeah. So I'm more of the ilk of, you know, if you have to make change on the grassroots level, inch by inch, drop by drop. And so, of course, at this point, I have to quote a fellow anthropologist, Margaret Mead, who said, never doubt that a committed group of individuals can make a difference because that's the only ones who do.
Right.
And so that's why I really think if we create pockets of change, pockets of positivity throughout the country, throughout the world, that's what's going to make a change also. So we have the changes at the bottom, at the grassroots level, as well as from the top, the policy level. And hopefully when we come together, everyone will benefit from changes being made at both ends.
I love that the work that you do seems to me to be deeply relational. I mean, it without relationships or broken, I guess, without broken relationships, I guess you don't sort of have a job, right, as an improvisational artist. And can I call you a psychotherapist? Is that fair?
I don't have a license as a psychotherapist, so no, you can call me a psychodramatist.
There you go. Nice. And the difference is that you have like an 8x10 that right? Like you, and a psychotherapist doesn't. That's a little entertainment joke there that clearly was probably lost on every one of my listeners. But anyway, I tried.
Right. Yeah. No. And I mean, again, I have to really say that psychotherapists are an amazing group of people because they are willing to listen to people's very difficult situations day after day. And that's just not something I could do. So, which doesn't make sense. But the difference is when I listen to people's problems, so to speak, it's really not because I'm trying to help them, but I am just trying to guide them in the direction so they can help themselves and figure it out for themselves. So that kind of gets me off the hook because I'm just facilitating the processes of people's own growth. And I think that's the big difference there.
Tell me, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
So I was going to ask you about sort of tone and scope, I guess, because I've spent a fair bit of time in Cambodia over the years working in development. I've spent time in Rwanda. I mean, you can have some pretty, I mean, we're talking about some pretty traumatic places with really difficult and horrific histories, and so deep trauma, deep you know, emotional baggage, and so on, and then you could have on the other end of that spectrum, oh, I don't know, let's say bullying problems at a local high school, and they're both severe, and they're both significant, and they're both important. Does this kind of improvisational work, like, is it across that spectrum? Is it left to right? Can you go from something sort of simpler and one-on-one to, you know, kind of more global and deeply traumatic? I'm having trouble finding the words because I'm not a psychotherapist, probably. But do you know what I'm asking?
Right. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Good.
So you're asking whether this is only for run-of-the-mill type of trauma versus...
I purposely chose not to use run-of-the-mill, but yeah, I guess that's what I mean. But, you know, something that you might more go to human resources for, you know? No, this is, you know, you could, or maybe this goes... And I think you sort of hinted to it earlier on about, you know, talking about some of the shootings in the U.S., over a period of time, some of those communities might be ready, you know, to do this kind of work.
Right. And so I'm not going to sit here and say that if you hire improv for peace to do psychodramas, then all your societal problems will be solved.
That's right.
No, it's
That's
a lot more complex.
Yeah. All your marital problems and economic problems will go by the wayside. Yes.
There you go. Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, again, that gets back to we need to work at a problem from various angles.
Mm.
But to answer the question that I think you were asking, can this kind of approach work for the trauma that people in Rwanda experience? And the answer is yes.
Mm.
So again, it has to do with going through smaller parts of the trauma in a safe environment.
Right.
Sometimes multiple times. In order to process it and come up with a different ending. So let me give you an example from a book by Peter Levine, who wrote Waking the Sleeping Tiger. No, we'll have to insert the appropriate title there.
Peter Levine, at least we've got, and it's got the word waking in
yes.
it, so we're good. Okay.
And tiger also. So he tells the story of a young boy in Africa that he was treating who had... he had been chased by a tiger and was traumatized by the fact that he was wounded by the tiger. And he kept reliving that incident over and over again. And so what Dr. Levine did is he led the boy through that scenario in his mind, but invited him to come up with a different solution, a different ending, such as, and then when the tiger came running after me, I climbed up a tree and I escaped. Now, obviously, that's not exactly how it happened to the little boy because he did experience a trauma, but it gave his brain a chance to heal. And so that's the same kind of thing we're talking about, very severely traumatic situations. And I think, again, some of what's happening in Africa is a really good example of that. It also helps to experience or go through these types of healing processes with other people who've had the same experience. My parents, as I alluded, are German, and so they grew up during World War II. They were 5 years old when the war started. And my mother just recently wrote a book about the horrific experiences of people living through that. And so I asked her, well, weren't there therapists around?
Right.
And she just laughed at me and said, no, that's not the way it works when you're in a traumatic situation like a war. There aren't therapists running around the way we have in this country now after Columbine shootings and those types of incidents. No, you just have to figure out how to deal with it. But in the process of being able to, as an adult, talk to others who had been through the same situation, also grown up during World War II Europe, not even just Germany, but just through the experience itself, that was healing. So then referencing back to what you mentioned about the trauma in Rwanda, I think these types of healing experiences need to happen with other Rwandans. And we can't just take someone from that culture, plop him down in the U.S. or Canada and say, okay, now talk about your experiences.
Right.
Because that empathy is missing. Unfortunately, someone in the U.S. is not going to be able to understand, comprehend the level, the intensity of trauma that that person experienced.
What I love what you're talking about to me is how important context is and how essential community is as well in the healing process, in building our EQ and realizing our potential to empathize, you know, with and for others. I mean, you've got to be rooted in, it seems to me, in a community of one kind or another.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, that's part of the human experience. I do really believe that that's what makes us fully human, is to be able to connect with others and to have those learning experiences, those life experiences. I had a good friend years ago, 20, 30 years ago, who decided he wanted to be a hermit. And I said, you know, you're not really going to be experiencing life. You're missing out on the highs and lows of life because you're not going to be connected to people.
Right.
And he just wanted to skip the traumatic, the hard, the sad part. But as human beings, we just have to go through that. And I'm aware as I'm saying that it's easy for me to say that because I live in a first world country.
Right.
But if you live in a third world country, you don't even have the luxury to think that way.
Sadly, because of my age, it reminds me of a Simon and Garfunkel song. I am a rock, right? I mean, I don't need I've got my books and my poetry to protect me, right? I don't need to be around people. I've been hurt before, therefore ... So who would have thought that we would have got onto why being a hermit may be a bad idea in this podcast, in this interview. Andrea, I'm wondering, so let's just get really practical here for a second. I'm the kind of guy, for all my, you know, ability to host podcasts and to get on stage and speak and so on, I'm not crazy about, I don't know, I guess, I'm not crazy about charades at a party. You know, I'm probably not a great candidate for improv. What do you do with me? How do you motivate me in one of those improvisational settings to get me out of my chair? And yeah, anyway, I think you probably got enough there for the question, but I'll do it, but probably maybe not willingly. Do you know what I mean? How do you deal with people like me?
Well, I have to tell you a secret. You're talking to an introvert, so I totally understand what you're
saying. See, now that's fascinating to me, right? That you're managing this type of work, you're doing this kind of work, you're creating these kinds of conversations, and then, you know, yet you call yourself an introvert. Interesting.
Yeah. So let me try to figure out a way to say this in a short version rather than give you the, you know, half hour lecture here.
Because, you know, large sums of chocolate or cash probably would work well.
There you go. Okay. That's my kind of person. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
The chocolate part.
That's right.
And no, obviously, if you come to a group, any kind of group experience, you're hopefully there by choice.
Mm.
Now, occasionally I do work with organizations where the employees are told you have to be there. So they're
right,
not there
exactly.
by choice.
It yeah.
just makes things a little, yeah. So we take that into consideration. But the thing is that no one has to get involved past their level of comfort. There's also a lot of different roles that people can play. So let me describe improv for peace processes a little differently by comparing them to a piece of theater, something that you go to the theater to see. There's main characters, there's supporting characters, and there's the audience. Now the audience, just by sitting there, people would think they're not doing anything, they're not working very hard. Actually, they are part of it too. They're having their emotional reaction. They're perhaps laughing or clapping or making booing noises. But without that audience, the players on stage really can't be doing anything. They're not effective because they're playing for an audience.
Right.
So in a sense, an improv for a piece process is the same way, that you don't necessarily have to be on stage acting out a scenario. However, if you're sitting on the sidelines watching things, you can either choose to be separate from that emotionally, or you can choose to kind of watch curiously and say, I wonder, does this remind me of something similar in my life? Not that specific scenario, but the feelings that come up. And so then it's the feelings that you want to work with. And at some point you may choose, for example, you could see something going on stage and you could say, I really don't like that. This just makes no sense. I don't know why nobody's protecting this guy up here. He's just being beaten up. Mm. Where is the protector? Well, just by saying that, even if you say that internally, you've already gotten involved. So that's then where you can invite yourself, or you are invited by one of the facilitators to go up and play that protector, to become someone who does change and improvise the drama that's happening up on stage by your presence, by what you bring to it. And by doing that, you become involved, not because I'm trying to trick you to get involved, but because you chose to. And hopefully that creates a healing experience for you also. So no chocolate involved.
No chocolate involved. Come on. That's no, it's really wonderful. I mean, I love how a creative technique like this is you know, being used for a catalyst for not just conversation, but for potentially some superficial change, but ultimately, you know, the ripple effect. It seems to me it's going to be pretty substantive and deep change. I mean, anytime when you talk about deep intimate conversation, and it seems to me that that's what this is sort of rooted in. I don't see how you can't not, you know, touch you know, some pretty important experiences and history and points. I mean, we're all pretty complex, nuanced, interesting, paradoxical people, really, aren't we?
We absolutely are. And I think that's what makes it so fascinating. And that's why I don't think we should all try to be the same, and we should all be exactly have the same thoughts and feelings and philosophies. We should celebrate who we are as individuals, because forgive me for saying this, I don't want to be just like you, and you don't want to be just like me. And that's what makes it so interesting.
It's true. It sounds to me like you've just defined life and the human condition, and I think that's probably a lovely place to wrap up. I can't believe that we've come to the end of our interview. I mean, I often say, and most of my listeners are rolling their eyes right now, but any good conversation seems like it just went by in an instant. So thank you so much for your time today. Let's just get real practical. It's improvforpeace.com. People can find out more about you there, but also can touch base with you and ultimately hire you and your team, or is it you personally?
Either way, it depends on the client,
the
size of the client, the size of the group. I also have a LinkedIn page that has some information, Facebook, obviously.
Well, thank you so much today. We've been talking with Andrea Hummel for Improv for Peace, and talking about relationships and theater and emotion and EQ and empathy and a whole lot of other things. Andrea, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.